When I looked at New York, I think one of the things we have to look at is the transition and how we understand the phenomenon of ISIS. People in this country think of ISIS as a terror group. I think of it as a transition far from where we were with Al-Qaeda 15 years ago. That is, ISIS is becoming validation for any group. If they have a grievance about Pakistan, drone strikes in Pakistan, America's presence in Syria or Iraq or Afghanistan, what's happening in terms of American support for Saudi airstrikes in Yemen. ISIS has become the catch-all for people who are angry about anything the U.S. has done. So when I looked at this, I guess my concern was that this is another example of an individual who's not a truly indoctrinated terrorist. It's just someone who's angry, and he looks at ISIS and says, ISIS tells me that it's okay to go kill people because of my anger. I think that was my takeaway from what I witnessed on December 11th.
What do you think the terrorists are going to take away from what took place down underneath in the subway of New York City from this?
The lesson here to me is that the fight continues regardless of the end of the caliphate of the sort of state that ISIS declared in Iraq and Syria. I look at this in the context of ISIS setbacks, and I think somebody might look at it and say, well, ISIS has lost so much ground. How long will people like this continue if ISIS doesn't have a foothold to recruit them or to indoctrinate them? And I say, look, you know, the phenomenon of terrorism has been around for decades. I would worry instead that ISIS will live on the internet and maybe in a new safe haven. Maybe that's Yemen. Maybe that's the Horn of Africa. Maybe that's somewhere in North Africa. I look at this and say people in the future who are going to say, I want to be a part of ISIS, don't necessarily have to say ISIS still has a state. All they have to say is ISIS still is an idea that we can agree for some extremists is acceptable. And like the fellow in New York, if I want to adopt that idea, I've got to go out and strap on a bomb.
So I've heard that the bomber actually was taunting the president using social media on Facebook, I believe it is, which also brings up the idea that even though he is on social media, which is in large part public, the NSA and the FBI can't possibly track down everybody that does something like this and identify them as a threat because there's so many of these situations out there with people engaging like this. What's your advice for the intelligence and law enforcement organizations?
One of the first questions you have in any one of these cases is, what is the lesson learned? And one of the frustrations is sometimes the lesson learned is not much. If somebody wants to sit in their house and build a very crude device in a country of 330 million people, please don't ask your security service to know about that all the time. I do think there are a couple of basic lessons. One is an old lesson. Whether the family or a friend knew something and whether they chose not to pick up the phone. We're going to learn that in the coming days, but I think that is a critical lesson in this case. When radicalism comes home and it's not directed by a central organization, the people at home have to be the ones who make the call. The second and broader lesson that we're talking about here is where we will be in 10 or 20 years in terms of California Silicon Valley companies policing themselves to take off information like how to build a bomb on the internet. Clearly, there are some civil liberties issues here, but that pendulum is already swinging. Some extremist videos on YouTube are already coming off. Preachers who used to be around a year ago are no longer on there. So I think there'll be questions about whether people like this in the future are even allowed to access not only ideological stuff like preacher videos, but also instructions on how to build a bomb. We are just starting that debate about what should be allowed on the internet.
And speaking of just starting, we're just getting into the heart of the holidays. Several other sources that I've spoken to have indicated they believe there may be more of this before this particular holiday season is over, given the current state of ISIS. Also, given what we have seen in Las Vegas, New York on Halloween, and now this. What's your view on that?
As a practitioner, you have to say that's correct, not just because these are holidays, but think of it in a different way. Somebody in this situation of the fellow in New York or the Las Vegas shooter or the West Side Highway killer last month is going to sit and say, how do I maximize casualties? How do I maximize the number of people I can hit? And clearly holidays, whether it's a Thanksgiving Day parade or a Christmas tree lighting ceremony, we've seen threats to those in the past, are places where people congregate. That said, when I look at this as a private citizen, I step back as an analyst and say the statistical likelihood, even if you agree that the threat to gatherings increases, the statistical likelihood in 50 states with celebrations in cities across America that my family will be affected by this is minuscule. So you might say, you know, I'm worried because of what I see on TV, and my answer would be, well, step back before you have an emotional response because of what you said on TV. Please give me the odds that you're going to be hurt. And if you do the odds, the answer is go out to the celebration. The likelihood you're going to get hurt is minuscule.
Put me back on the right track then. Give me some sense of where this thing really needs to go to get fixed.
We've already taken a huge step in the right direction. If you look at, and I would date this to sort of going back to the Boston bombings a few years ago, if you look at public reaction to events like this, people are increasingly saying, you know, a catastrophic event is something we need to spend a lot of time on, but we should not as a culture be focusing on individuals who have a relatively minor, modest effect on American culture, American society. The governor of New York has talked about that. People have repeatedly talked about American resilience. We talked about Boston Strong. Just we've already seen huge progress. The second area, though, that I would expect to see more debate and more progress on is how do we limit the internet activity of individuals like this? Mm-hmm. Is it okay for the government to look at activity short of illegal operations by a terrorist? Is it okay to look at when someone starts to research things like, I want to buy backpacks and I want to buy ball bearings at the same time? That debate is beginning in this country. The most interesting part of that debate to me is not the traditional debate. How does the Congress establish laws? The most interesting part of that debate to me is how do private companies and public companies protect themselves by acting before the law tells them to act. YouTube, again, has done this. YouTube has said we're taking off Anwar al-Awlaki, who is a preacher who is really influential among American kids. I think Silicon Valley increasingly is going to take action without the U.S. Congress, and I think that's great. That's how it should be.
What are you seeing here in Washington in terms of what authorities are doing? Is it the right thing? Is it enough? I'm speaking in terms of intelligence and security officials.
I think we're doing the right thing, and because I think that we're stepping back from overreacting to every event and either scaring the American people or asking whose head should be on a platter at the FBI or Department of Homeland Security, at the CIA. I think we're understanding that if an individual or a few individuals want to do something, there's not always a perfect solution. I do think we're making good decisions about how to balance security with freedom. I don't want to get too much into this, but, you know, I travel a lot on the Northeast Corridor. I travel on the train. The train is not as difficult to get on as an airplane. I think that's great. I do not want to make this. I don't think anybody wants to make this a security culture. So having a lot of police around, having dog sniffing animals around is appropriate. Ensuring that everybody has to take their shoes off before they got on the train, I think that would be unacceptable. So I think we're heading toward a more balanced conversation about how we protect America without having to have a conversation about how to change America. And I think politicians are slowly getting to the point where they're not overreacting to every event. I think that's great. I think that's where we should be.
Philip Mudd is a former CIA and FBI executive. J.J. Green, WTOP News.